I remember Erin coming home and trying to get into her club.
Oh, crying.
I said it. How you do what?
Where are you learning all these old wives' tales?
Is that how you lose weight?
We're having family home evening at the Hall's house. And Dennis Erlener and David and Karen are back on vacation from Chicago and New Jersey, respectively. And Charlotte and Nancy are here. Ginger's on her mission in Scotland. And it's August 6, 1973. And Dad, we just finished asking these first six questions to Mom and on the other tape. And now we're letting her catch her breath. And Dad just came back from a ball game with his priest. And so now we're going to give it to him.
So you have Mom on two sides on that other one?
One side.
Just one side.
Well, this is the other side of the same tape?
No, we decided to start a new tape.
I just telling Karen that it'll only take you half as much tape.
Oh, we might get him wound up. Okay, we made Mom take a big oath that she'd tell all the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, unless it proved to be embarrassing.
But, it did.
Yeah, but
we'll just assume
you're not going to tell any lies here. Okay, let's start at the beginning. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your ancestry and where they came from?
Well, my father, Howard Hall, was born in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, June 22nd, 1887.
Mm-hmm.
His parents were Henry C. Hall and Mary Ann Woodcock. And offhand, I've forgotten where they were born. Henry C. Hall's father was also Henry C. Hall. And this first Henry C. Hall, Naomi McElroy. Anyway, this first Henry C. Hall, in Ohio somewhere, was the first. They used to have mule-drawn streetcars, and he was a driver of one of those first streetcars where they pulled the streetcar with a mule. And the Halls were sort of in the railroad business from that time on. His son, Henry C. Hall, was working on the railroad and then came to Pocatello, Idaho to work on the railroad, and was transferred from Pocatello, which was a rail center, to Ogden, Utah, which is a larger rail center. And somehow later on, the second Henry C. Hall, who was the father of Howard Hall, got into the transfer business. But my father started work on the railroad too. At a young age, he quit school in the fifth grade, as many people did in those days, and worked as what was called a call boy on the railroad beginning at age 11. Now, what a call boy did would go around and wake up the engine crews, you know, the switching and trains going in and out of the yard. You see, Ogden was the largest rail center west of Omaha, Nebraska. And I guess they didn't have telephones in those days, or they weren't too common. And my dad would know the apartments or the homes where they lived, and he'd have to go there and wake up the crews. You'd have thought they'd had an alarm clock or something.
Well, no, they didn't know when they would go out.
Well, I suppose maybe that's it. Maybe there were unexpected calls and trains would be late and whatnot. Anyway, that was his first job on the railroad. And he continued working on the railroad and moved up the line, becoming brakeman and fireman and the various things. And this is what he was doing when he met my mother at age around 31, I guess. I don't know why Dad didn't get married earlier. I don't know why my mother had opportunity to get married that I remember her talking about, but she didn't like the guys that wanted to marry her. In fact, she had to run away from one who chased her to Idaho and then chased her back to Salt Lake. She couldn't get rid of him. But I never heard my dad talk about any former girlfriends or anything. I never did. But my mother had become a bookkeeper. She'd gone to Henniger's Business College or LDS Business College. I think it was Henniger's. And had learned bookkeeping. She also learned sewing in one of these sewing colleges. Maybe the business colleges, kind of trade schools they used to have in those days, probably taught sewing. Anyway, she took sewing and learned sewing and bookkeeping both very well, and I think she did both for a living at various times.
I didn't remember that she did the sewing.
Oh yeah, she was a good seamstress. She learned all the tailoring and everything else. Maybe not like your mother, but my mother made, as boys, see there were five of us, she made all her clothes, shirts, pants, the works. Up until, she made suits, too. As a matter of fact, Bishop DeMick used to give my mom his old suits. He was
Fred
a top
Nye.
Salesman in Fred M. Nye. And he always looked well-dressed, you know. He had on the latest suits and new suits. And he would occasionally give his discarded suits to my mom, and she would cut them down to size to fit us boys. Clear up until I was age 18 or 19, she was doing that. So she was a good seamstress.
What a job.
But anyway,
she
was working in Wilson's Grocery Store, which was on Wall Avenue at approximately, this is a guess, 27th Street. Perhaps 28th Street, Wall Avenue.
Well, there's two of them.
And at this time, my grandfather and grandmother Hall were living on Benford Street, north side of the street, I've forgotten the number, about two houses from the corner of Wall and Benford. This was a fairly nice home for the day, but it was down in the railroad section of town. The Negroes lived there, Negro porters and other people, but my grandfather lived next door to Negroes all his life, I guess. There was not all that much segregation. I suppose in that day that Negro porters were fairly high-class people. I just read a Reader's Digest article about Negro porters, and they sort of helped advance their people because they got out and saw what the rest of the world was like, and in its own day, that was a fairly high station in life to be a Negro porter, but they lived all around there. The Negro people who worked on the railroad were just behind him and to the side of him. But the Negroes lived in houses just as nice as my grandpa's, as I remember, because I'd been in some of those houses. But it was a much nicer house than I ever lived in as a kid, my grandfather Hall's house. They had moved there from Pacific Avenue. They had first lived and I believe had built a house on Pacific Avenue, but that was later taken over by all the railroad tracks, huge switching yards that they built in Ogden, so they had moved to Benford. Well, somewhere along the line, my dad had saved most of his money. As a matter of fact, in those days, if you were still living at home, you gave almost all, you gave all your earnings to your parents. I remember my father saying that, and golly, he must have been in his 20s, that he would just bring his pay home and turn it over to his mother. And one day he bought a friend of his and himself a bottle of soda pop out of the pay, and his mom noticed the 10 cents missing when he got home, and he got a scolding for it.
Wow.
But anyway, my dad must have earned an awful lot of money between age 11 and age 32 when he got married. When he got married, he didn't have anything because he'd been giving it to his parents that whole time. But with that money, I guess Grandpa Hall had been saving at least some of what Dad brought home. My grandfather formed a transfer business. Transfer business in that day was trucking. It was local trucking mainly and moving. Well, I guess it was not so local because I've heard my dad talk about trucking into Idaho and trucking into Wyoming. But he made my dad a partner in the business. But I guess he was a non-owning partner. I have a picture. The business was located on 25th Street. 25th Street never did have too good a reputation in Ogden because it had
Oh, it's got a terrible reputation
now. Drinking and prostitutes and those kind of things, but there were some respectable businesses along there. I know there was, I can remember, a Murphy's Curio Shop. There were businesses that catered to the railroad trade, because the railroad station was at Wall Avenue and 25th Street, right at the foot of 25th Street. So there was a hotel there and other things. But I've forgotten the exact address, but I believe the transfer business of Grandpa Hall's, and it was called City Transfer and Storage, was located on the south side of 25th Street, and I believe it was between Wall Avenue and Lincoln, probably about in the middle of the block. Now, my dad knew all the Jewish people in the pawn shops and the clothing business, and he had some Gentile, non-Mormon friends, too. I remember a fellow by the name of Murphy, who owned the corner and ran a curio shop, and I believe a kind of a lunch counter or something. I know he was a nice man, and my dad was friends of his all his life. But anyway, my Grandpa Hall, Henry C. Hall, had the first Model T truck. The initial business was with teams, see, horses pulling wagons to move people's furniture. And of course, they were right by the railroad station, and they'd truck stuff from the rail that came on the railroad cars. They'd put it on their wagon and haul it to the customer in the area. But as soon as trucks came along, my Grandpa Hall got, I believe it was they called it a 3/4 ton truck in those days, maybe it was 1 ton, Model T truck, which Grandpa were here to tell us. I believe it was probably the first in Ogden. And this sort of gave them greater range, and they would truck stuff from the depot in Ogden clear into Idaho and clear into Wyoming and other places. Dad's told us some pretty good stories through the years on this trucking business.
Was it pretty successful?
Oh yeah, my dad, my grandfather Hall, by my standards, was rich.
When did the business break up? When did your father?
Well, my grandfather, Henry C. Hall, of course, was non-Mormon. My dad was the first to join the church, and his mother and father opposed it a great deal. Gave a lot of opposition to it. They changed just before their death, but before that, they didn't think anything of Mormonism. And my grandfather Hall drank. He used whiskey like a lot of people did who weren't Mormons.
And some who were.
And some who were, I guess. And I suppose it's getting the better of him in his older years as he approached 70. And that was probably partly cause for the transfer business sort of going down the drain. My dad got out of it, and my dad's brother, Sam, carried it on for a little while, but it eventually just faded out. I guess it must have lost anything that it ever built up. I don't know how it was finally phased out. I don't know whether Grandpa owned that property on 25th Street or not. I would guess that he did.
I think that's interesting, because when I was on a debate trip at Weaver, that was one of the big sights that we got to see, is the bus. Everybody got on the bus and they drove us down 25th Street so we could see all the prostitutes and the closed windows, and you know, this was the gangster's alley, and I can remember the creepy feeling I got going down 25th Street. I just was just sick the whole ride, but really interested.
Well, during Prohibition days, it was the street where you could buy the booze and where the prostitutes were located. Bishop Loftgreen, the 18th Ward, once took us kids, I suppose we were 15, 16 years old, down 25th Street and pointed out where the brothels were.
That was a good thing to do for boys.
Well, it's just showing us what to beware of, and you know, young kids would be ignorant of what 25th Street was all about. And he took us down an alley and showed us a pile of whiskey bottles. This was still during Prohibition, supposedly. And that pile of whiskey bottles was as tall as this ceiling, just one huge mound of whiskey bottles.
Wow. What was the matter with the local garbage collection?
Well, I imagine the police were in cahoots with everything that went on in 25th Street.
Well, they still are, from what we heard while we were there. The police were the ones who were keeping 25th Street going. I don't know if it's true, but that's
well,
what they all think.
Well, I got detoured, but what happened is that my grandmother used to shop at this Wilson's grocery where my mother was the bookkeeper. And,
she'd send him the store.
She'd send Howard down to the store. And he'd see this pretty girl, you know. Apparently, Grandpa Hall was kind of bashful. Must have been. Let's go to age 32. I never heard him talk about any girls. But, he was always neatly dressed, apparently. He wore a hat, you know, and was always neatly dressed, according to my mother. So he'd go down there. Grandpa Hall smoked cigars in those days. And so they sort of started eyeing each other, I guess. I don't know how dating started, but at least that's where they met, and that was the beginning of things. But my mother, of course, recognized that Dad was a really fine, nice fellow, but of course he wasn't a Mormon. He hadn't been raised in an LDS home. He'd had one or two contacts with Mormons, one way or another. Somewhere in Wilson Lane, I heard him mention a contact with Mormons. I don't know what the deal was.
He wanted to go
there.
To dances. I remember that. His mother wouldn't let him.
But anyway, grandmother Hall was a little bit, I don't know what you'd say, peculiar in some ways. She had five children herself?
Yeah.
She somehow got the idea that it was
sinful
to have children. And she didn't want Howard to have children, and she didn't want her son Sam to have children. And Sam never did. Sam got married late in life, and so did my dad. And I don't know, I suppose that she must have been hanging on to my father, you know, and keeping him away from girls and not letting him date one. I don't know, to a late age, it's strange, but... In those days, I suppose parents had more control, you know, like taking all his money from that he earned from age 11 clear up till he got married at age 31 or so.
This was just a standard practice.
But
you had to go out on your own, and then you could have your money. But if you, as long as you're in the parental home, you give everything to the.
Then
parents.
Anyway, as time went on, see, my dad started to see the light. By the way, my dad was a socialist at this time.
He used to get up on the soapbox,
yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah, and he would go to City Hall Park in Ogden and stand on a soapbox and preach socialism. he's the biggest capitalist there ever was.
But he wasn't immoral or wild or anything like that.
I don't think so. I don't think at all.
Because he used to talk about the days in his... youth when he was a socialist and a communist, and he sort
well,
of contrasts that
communist.
With Mormonism.
He wasn't a communist, he was a socialist.
But I don't get that picture of him. At least from what my impression of Grandma, I don't think she would have married a man who was that way.
An idealistic type socialist, I'm sure.
But anyway, I don't know what discussions he and Mom had, but he finally decided that the church was true, and So having decided that, he said, well, yeah, I'll have to live the word of wisdom. Now, I guess he drank a little on occasion. I'm sure he didn't drink a lot, but his dad drank, and I guess his brothers did. So he said that when he decided to quit smoking, there wasn't anything to it. Just threw away his last cigar and never touched any tobacco from then henceforth, ever.
But he told me that he shook on his bed for 3 days.
Did he?
Yeah, when I was a little girl, I asked him if he gave up cigarettes. He told me that he just shook for a few days.
Might have done. But anyway...
But he got over it.
He
said he
quit,
never ate
see,
another
cigarette.
He
didn't try to taper off or anything. He just made the decision to quit, and he quit. And of course, he had been drinking tea and coffee in his home all his life. Quit that, never touched it again, and never touched any alcohol again. And then, of course, came the issue of this railroad work. It's a good job. See, he'd been working on the railroad for 20 years. Really worked his way up.
And in Ogden, those were the best paying jobs.
Oh, yeah. We knew
about. They paid $200 a month. Railroaders got $200 a month, and they were the rich people in town.
But with his idealism, he says, well, if I'm going to be a member of the church, I'm going to have to take my family to church. I can't work on Sundays anymore like the railroad had to do it. So I quit working on the railroad.
Now, this is after he had a lot of children, isn't it?
No, no.
Oh, no children.
He had a couple.
He may have had Jean and I.
It was after the war.
Of course, that's another thing. He went into the war before I was born, I guess.
You were born while he was in the service.
Was I? I used to know that relationship, but I've forgotten.
And his brother died of flu while he was in the service.
My father went to Camp Lewis in Washington and was in the trucking group. Teams, what did they call them? Anyway, with all his railroad and trucking experience, he was a truck, in a truck battalion that would deliver supplies to the front line, supposedly, something like that. But the war ended while he was in training at Camp Lewis. His brother Ralph, though, had been shipped overseas. This is World War I, and was in England. And we had this great flu epidemic, you know, where people died by the tens of thousands.
No penicillin.
And Ralph got this bad flu and died in England, was buried over there.
Did they ever ship him home?
Yes. After the war was all over and things cleared away, if you wanted it, they would exhume the body and ship him home. And Ralph was shipped home. He's buried in Ogden City Cemetery. Let's see. Dad had an older brother, Eugene. And that's where my brother, Eugene, gets his name. Who died as a baby and is buried somewhere in Pocatello, Idaho area. It occurred when they were there. And Ida Rose and I have been up there trying to find a record of the birth and
the death?
Cemetery or something. We've never been able to locate anything. And I think we must have asked Grandpa Hall about burial or something, and he knew nothing. Of course, he would have been younger, see, when that occurred. Hadn't been born yet. Let's see. And then he had Sam, who was the oldest brother. I don't know if Sam was older than Eugene or not. I've forgotten. Eugene may have been the first. And then there was Howard, my father, and then there was Ralph, and then the youngest was May.
Tracy's supposed to look a lot like Ralph.
Yeah. When I was young, walking around the streets of Ogden at age 17 or 18, occasionally a man would come up to me and say, "Hi, Ralph." And apparently I looked a great deal like my Uncle Ralph. It used to happen a lot, not just an isolated instance. A lot of people would think
his,
I was
his
Ralph.
Wife, and his wife says that she would see him sometimes and really take a double take. Because he looked so much like
my Aunt Grace. She never did remarry. She's still living. She lives in Pebble Beach, California. And she has been a widow for...
Charlotte, shut that screen door. The bugs will fly in.
Approximately 55 years. She never remarried.
Just the screen.
I think I met her once. Doesn't she have peroxide of blonde hair?
She's very attractive.
That'd be her daughter. Dorothy, probably.
Oh.
Well, let's see. Where were we?
You were saying when he quit the railroad.
Oh, he never did really have a good job after that. He went
to
insurance.
He
always
tried to sell, and he never.
He liked selling, but he wasn't a good salesman.
And he was a sucker for any salesman that came along. Anyone could sell him anything.
He later on got a pretty good job in a creamery. A truck driver, I think, again. But then when the crash came in 1929, something happened to that job. Somewhere along the line, he went back to work on the railroad. And you know, once you've quit the railroad, then you're sort of at the bottom of the pile again. You lose all your
seniority.
So he took a job in Carlin, Nevada. And I must have been 5 or 6 years old, because these are some of my earliest memories. I can just barely remember them. We went on the train. We had free passes on the railroad because he was working on the rail. We went to Carlin, and we lived in a log cabin while we were there.
Now, where was this, Nevada?
Carlin, Nevada.
Yeah, we stopped there.
But he didn't stay there very long. Yeah, we went out and got a picture of the old little tiny church out there. Liz and Marty took it for us and mailed it to us.
We forgot to take our camera.
But we didn't stay there very long. They had the electric generator in town, and they turned it on only one day a week. So you used kerosene or candlelight.
And did your washing that day?
Yeah, did your washing the day they turned the electric power out in the town. I remember some interesting things about that town. I remember a lady who smoked a corn cob pipe, and that really seemed funny to Eugene and I. We thought that was something, a lady that smoked a corn cob pipe. In this little log house we rented, there was a player piano, which was fascinating to us. Some of the terrifying moments of my early life occurred in that town. There are big bullies in that town.
You had more big
bullies? Yeah, when I was little. When I was young, I was tiny. And I was really skinny and underweight. People thought I was going to die. I was so unhealthy looking all the time, so little. And I always got picked on by bigger boys. They look for a weakling to pick on. But they used to pick on Eugene and I both in that town, an awful lot. And being a tough railroad town is really something. And the kids were tough. One incident, a kid got up on his house with his 22 and was shooting at his mom and dad. Wouldn't let any of his family members come near the house. That's the kind of town Carlin was. But some kids, and you know these metal culverts, the spiral kind of a galvanized pipe they put under a road and things like that?
Yeah.
Well, there was one just big enough for a little 4 and 5 year old kid to crawl in real tight. And these kids enticed me to crawl in from one side and Eugene to crawl in from the other side. And then they built a fire at each end of the culvert.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, I've never heard these stories.
Oh, you should hear some of the ones.
How did you get out?
You wouldn't turn around in them, would you?
No.
You couldn't get out.
It's a wonder we didn't get killed because the smoke came in, you know, and we were choking and gasping. I'm not quite sure how we were rescued from that. Maybe, you know, kids will do things that they're going to scare you right up to the point of death and then they're going to rescue you. They may have, some older boys may have come along or something and moved the fire. See, you wouldn't have been able to get out without crawling through the fire. You'd have got burned. Kicked the fire away and we got out. There were some other strange things in that. Little kids, you know, will get into everything. I can remember the railroad station.
Little kids like you.
And crawl space underneath it was held up by square posts, just maybe a foot and a half off the ground, and you could sort of crawl under the station. And the entire area underneath the station was matches.
That you could light?
Yeah, you could scratch them and light them.
Oh, boy.
And I guess kids had just gone under there and strewn matches under there for what mischief, I don't know. But I remember you going to that station any time. There were just matches everywhere underneath the station. We only lived there for a short while, maybe about 6 months, and then we moved back to Ogden.
I'll bet your mother had something to do with that.
That period was sometime around 1927. And it may have been after that he got the job at Nelson Rick's Creamery.
Were you baptized then? Was that after you were baptized? Because you were
I could have only been
you were born
six. I hadn't gone to school yet.
You were born
yet.
19, if this is 27, that's
well,
eight.
Maybe that's too late. Maybe it's 25.
It would have been, because you were baptized in
Marion. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm probably making this too old. I may have only been 4 or 5. And we were living on 16th Street. I was born on 16th Street. And then my dad and mom purchased a lot. I can remember going to this cherry orchard in Ogden on about 15th Street and Jefferson Avenue and walking across a plank across the mill creek. I can remember that. They bought this lot in this cherry orchard, new development, and we moved there and lived in a tent. And I can remember our piano being in a tent.
Yeah, same piano that you had all the time. Uh-huh. I'll be darned. Uh-huh. Where did you get that piano? Do you remember?
My father bought that for his mother, and the mother gave it to us.
Where's that now?
Who's got it now? I don't know what's happened to it by now. It's gone.
I have a couple of questions. You've answered a lot of these, but maybe you can just describe your parents a little bit more, what they looked like, what their personalities were like.
Well, both of them were reserved and retiring and quiet. At least that's my impression. Now, Grandpa lived with us here in his older years, you know, when he's around 83 to 85, and he seemed to be plenty outgoing then, but when I was younger, I don't remember him as being that outgoing. Maybe he was, and I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was kind of retiring. Both were short. My father, I don't know what his height was. He was dark, had a dark complexion, and youthful. Grandpa Hall looked youthful. At 85 when he died, most people would take him for 65 or 60. Always looked youthful. Grandpa Hall was very strong physically, extremely strong.
He was little, but he was strong.
From his moving days, see, in this transfer business, in those days, a man really had to be able to lift a piano. My dad claims to have taken a piano up the stairs to the second story all by himself on more than one occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And I can believe it. He was really strong.
Well, when he had that first heart attack, didn't they tell him it was from all those years of lifting heavy things or something?
I don't know.
That was probably why he could survive the heart attack.
Well, they told him to quit lifting things, though. That was later on in his life.
Heart attack at age 65, and he lived 20 years beyond that.
Did you know that when he was 85, he'd forgotten that he had a heart attack? When we reminded him that he'd had a heart attack, he couldn't remember that he'd had a heart attack.
I don't ever remember Dad as being sick, but my mother was sick a lot. But my mother's sickness never kept her from working. She worked constantly for us kids, and she always working late into the night, and she was always up whenever any of us came in.
After we were married, she was always ironing at night.
If I could come in at 2 o'clock in the morning, my mom would still be up ironing or sewing or washing.
No wonder she was sick.
But so while she had goiter removed, and her eyes were never very good. She had an eye operation at one point.
On her tear ducts.
So her general health was never too good, but it never kept her from working.
And she had a goiter operation.
She didn't ever play sick, you know, or take advantage of being sick. And during depression years and whatnot, she went out to work too. She didn't work at good jobs. She worked at maid in the Broom Hotel for a long, long time.
I was telling the kids that my parents, for a year or two, they were on WPA. Were your parents, they were on the WPA?
They never go on it.
Didn't they?
Mm-hmm. No.
How come they didn't? Just too proud?
I think so. They were really against it.
Dad, that's like I said, he got off of it just real fast.
Yeah, he wasn't a socialist anymore.
After my dad joined the church, socialism was out.
And a man in those days, that's why I can't see how our country's gotten to the welfare situation that it has, because people, it was their pride to be able to support themselves and to take care of their own and not have to have any help.
But what about all those people who wouldn't work more hours?
Well, it was the history of the country. A man who was on welfare, had to be taken care of, was looked down upon.
You see, he really looked down on this guy who did that.
Well, he did, but there were all these men doing it.
Oh, yeah. But I think this was the beginning of that type of a thing, the welfare
kind of the welfare
syndrome.
Mm-hmm. You've described it a little bit, but what kind of an atmosphere was in your home while you were growing up?
Well, I remember it as pleasant. I know that we were poor. Poorest people around in most places I can remember. But I never resented it. And I know that I would listen to things that my dad would tell me. I can remember he told me one time when I was real young, he says, Coca-Cola has bad things in it. You should never drink it. I never did. I believed him, you know, and I never tried it. And I remember another lesson he gave me. He said, don't ever envy rich people. And don't ever think it's bad for somebody to have money. He says, it's okay. He says, that's our system. He says, most people who earn money have got it because of hard work. And then most people who earn these huge sums of money put their money to work. They build businesses and make it so people can have jobs. So he says, don't ever... In other words, he's preaching to me the opposite of socialism, see, which he had abandoned. He was preaching me the free enterprise system, and telling me not to ever envy or feel bad because some people seem to have money. That was okay. There's nothing the matter with it. I remember those two things very well. I know that our parents used to read the Book of Mormon to us at night. I can remember that. Five little boys, no sisters. There were no deaths in our family as children, but I think my mom had some miscarriages. Haven't you heard her?
Yes, she said that.
I don't know how many.
She said she had quite a few between Wendell and Delbert. She wouldn't have had any room to have many miscarriages between the rest of you. You're pretty close together. But I think she had several between...
Our family members were pretty well behaved, all of them.
They were all smart kids, too.
Eugene had a few scrapes that I can remember. I can remember at a very early age, he came home with the smell of tobacco on him, and he couldn't have been more than five. And I can remember my mom and pop really grilling him, really giving him the business. It's funny how you get into scrapes when other kids teach you things you should never learn. I can remember a dirty joke that was told to me at age five.
You gotta tell
it? No. But you would think you would forget those things. That's the trouble with dirty jokes. You ought to close your ears when they stick
with you. This is what I tell my Sunday school class. You'll remember those dirty jokes all your life, but you won't remember the funny ones. You just try to remember a funny one.
But I can remember some of those early experiences when people... usually older boys, you know, that I think they take great delight in forming these young innocent boys of all these things.
Yeah, it's just like Nancy's taking delight in teaching Daniel.
Yeah,
she's teaching Daniel to say, no way.
No,
all these smart
aleck
man.
I can remember when the boys in my neighborhood, and I'm sure it's no more than five, started telling me about sexual intercourse, only they didn't use such highfalutin term, you know. And shocked. What are you talking about, you know?
How old were
you? Well, you're five, I think. I couldn't have been more than five. Well, your mother and father do it, they said. And I says...
Not my mother and father.
No, not my mother and father, you know.
Well, I heard it at 12 and I didn't believe it.
I had no idea what a girl was like. I didn't have any brothers or sisters, and I said,
"You had brothers, but not sisters."
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any sisters, so I didn't know, you know. But I said, "Well, what do they do, you know?" And well, I thought that the man must be putting these things, you know, in the back part. I didn't know a lady had a front part, you know. But
he's just five.
But you'd be surprised how early in life that big boys start telling little boys all this stuff, you know, that they don't even need to know until they're 13 years old.
Older than that.
But during the same period, I can remember playing tag, you know, and the guys would say, you know, they come and tell you, and you're young and innocent, and you don't know any better. They'd say, now, we play tag with all these girls, you know, and it's kind of tag where you tackle them. And the object of the game is to tackle them and feel their bottoms. Age five, they're telling you that kind of
stuff. Well, those little first graders still do it.
Yeah.
You were in that wild town?
Well, this was in Ogden. When I got to out in the country, it was wilder still. But,
I had a very secluded childhood.
Well,
I never got into any of
that. I think girls have a more secluded childhood than boys, I can admit. Because these older boys, they want to get these young innocent boys and tell them all this stuff.
David, did you have a secluded childhood?
I was about nine.
Well, anyway, Uncle Gene got in a couple of these kind of scrapes with tobacco. And that's the older boys, you know, that come and... Well, I could tell you a lot of other things that the older boys try and get you to do. And I'm sure we weren't any older than four or five that are worse than what I told you by a long ways. But won't get into those. and you're innocent, you know, so you... Mothers have got to really be on their guard. They really do, because at a very early age, those older boys are going to be getting those little kids into all kinds of mischief. But I don't remember any... Gene, if there was anybody who rebelled just a little tiny bit, maybe it was Eugene, but it wasn't a big...
I remember your mother...
It wasn't a big rebellion at all.
And he came back fast.
Yeah.
Very, very...
Most of the boys went right along, and we always went to church.
I think Gene got in with a bunch of wrong boys in high school. But it's sure straight now.
Oh, yeah. We all went to church regularly. We did every assignment they ever asked us. We were completely faithful in church, the whole family, the parents and all the kids. Never any problems. Always. We could always be depended on, everybody in the whole family.
And that's how our family was. Even though my father was inactive, they'd always ask the girls to handle the parties and decorate and stuff like that.
What's your next question, daughter?
Let's see. Well, I guess we're done. I said, what are the names of your brothers? Tell us about them. Describe each a little.
What number is that one?
You got them all, didn't you?
Description.
In order of descending age, Howard, Tracy, Eugene, Melvin.
That's just two.
Donald.
No, Wendell Herbert.
After Herbert Hoover.
No, after the Herberts.
Oh, sure.
I asked Mom about that once. It's
sure.
After the Herbert ancestors, not Herbert Hoover.
Oh.
And Donald Ray, and Ray spelled R-E-Y. Hmm. And Delbert Henry. Henry after his two...
Grandfather.
His grandfather and great-grandfather, Henry C. Hall.
Okay.
The brothers, Eugene... might be a hair taller than I. Delbert is tall. Wendell and Donald a little short.
No,
Wendell is the shortest.
Wendell's the shortest.
All of them tend to have hair fairly dark.
Except
Donald is the lightest.
And Gene was light. He was always blonde.
My mother and father's hair, both brunette.
You and Wendell are
younger.
The darkest in the family.
Not real dark brunette, just moderate brunette. Both had blue eyes.
Did you get along pretty well as brothers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They never fought.
Sure,
they didn't fight.
We didn't fight
at
all.
They didn't fight. I've never seen those brothers fight.
Well, they still don't. They seem to really have a lot of love for each other.
There was a little antagonism between Eugene and I at times. Because of our somewhat different personalities, I think. I was always the goer. I was out exploring the universe constantly. And Eugene preferred to stay at home and read books. He was a great reader. he would read, and I'd be out seeing what
it would be like. You and Tracy and David.
All the kids were good students. Every one of them were good students. No, never any problems in school with any of them.
Well, now, why do you think they were good students? They were smart kids.
Yeah, but did your parents push it or
anything?
Not
at all.
No, not a bit.
Not a bit.
We were never taught to go to college. We were never...
Not a bit. No pushing at all.
Never.
How come then?
Pushed for A grades or anything. Never.
It was the difference in the culture. They were raised in I think that was one of the things, during the Depression. And teachers would tell the kids, well, there's one way you can get ahead. And that's be smart. Nobody ever told him about going to college until he got in high school.
Every kid in our family just automatically liked school. When the kids would shout, no more teachers, no more books, no more
teachers
with cross-eyed looks, some darn thing, and tear up all their papers and throw them away at the end of the year, I'd have mine carefully preserved and hold them against my chest.
And take them home and
take them away from
me.
Take them home and save them. And my brothers were the same.
Oh, see, these are the neat things for these tapes. You don't get stories like this on the tapes.
Out on the farm, see, we lived there. I went through the first and second grade at Mount Ford School when we lived on 15th Street and Jefferson Avenue in a half a house that my Uncle Henry built. My Uncle Helan Henry. No.
Tracy. Yeah, Helan Tracy.
Helan Tracy. One of the older...